From the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC, it's The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, Plácido Domingo, who put LA Opera on the map, has resigned following allegations of sexual harassment and assault. Then Antonio Banderas got his start with filmmaker Pedro Almodovar. They didn't always see eye to eye, but now they've made their most personal film yet.
For 22 years, we didn't work, okay? So I went to America. I did a number of movies here. And after 22 years, he called me back. So I got there kind of cocky. Look how I act now. And after rehearsing a little bit, he just looked at me and he says, you know, I am not going to use all that shit that you're bringing.
All that coming up on The Frame. Plácido Domingo resigned today as general director of LA Opera. He has been under a cloud since the Associated Press reported in two stories over the last 2 months about decades of sexual harassment and assault allegedly committed by the opera legend. Several organizations around the country canceled appearances by Domingo in the wake of the reports, but LA Opera kept him on board while it launched an investigation that was being conducted by an LA law firm. Joining me to talk about Plácido Domingo's resignation is Jessica Gelt. She's a staff writer at the LA Times. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
So first off, did today's resignation come as a surprise? Because Domingo and LA Opera seemed like they were prepared for the investigation to be carried out.
Yeah, it didn't, particularly in light of what happened last week at the Metropolitan Opera, when at the last minute, less than 24 hours before the show was supposed to open, Plácido Domingo dropped out of the Met's production of Macbeth. And that seemed to happen under pressure after a story that weekend broke by NPR that stated that Peter Gelb, the Met Opera's chief, had held a closed-door meeting with employees in which he said that they were going to keep Domingo in their production because the allegations made by 20 women in the two AP stories could not be quote-unquote corroborated. And that opened up just a pretty serious firestorm. And it was shortly after that that Plácido Domingo issued his statement that he was going to pull out of Macbeth at the Metropolitan Opera. And after that happened, it really felt like it was a matter of time, you know, because LA Opera kind of was the last company standing in America that hadn't sort of pulled its support of Plácido at that point. So we knew it was probably coming. We just didn't know when.
There are a couple of investigations going on. The LA Opera is doing its own. There's also an investigation from the American Guild of Musical Artists. Do we know the status of those investigations and whether or not they'll continue?
Yes, the investigation being conducted by Deborah Yang.
And she's a private practice lawyer and the former U.S. attorney to the Southern District.
Yes, Gibson, Dunn and Kutcher. When Domingo issued his statement that he was resigning, LA Opera CEO Christopher Kolsch also sent a letter out to opera employees stating that they may have questions about that investigation, but they felt it was very important that that investigation reaches its conclusion. And similarly, the Times reached out to the American Guild of Musical Artists about their investigation, and they confirmed that that investigation, despite Domingo's resignation, will continue. They stated they owe it to their members to continue that investigation, and they encourage members who may have information to reach out. And the same goes at LA Opera. So there will still be results coming down the line from both of those investigations.
So in the United States, organizations in San Francisco, in Philadelphia, in Dallas, and New York were rescinding invitations for Domingo to perform. But in Europe, it sounds as if those appearances haven't yet been canceled, and there are planned tours and appearances. What do we know about what is going on in Europe and where Domingo might actually perform in the coming year?
So it seems that his calendar is pretty packed with upcoming performances, not only in the fall, but going into next year in Switzerland, in Russia, Austria, Germany, Spain, Italy. None of these things, Poland, none of these appearances appear to have been canceled. And that's kind of in keeping with what our classical music critic witnessed in Austria in late August after the allegations first broke in the AP, where Domingo received a standing ovation. It seems that, at least in Europe right now, they're standing behind Domingo.
Now, Domingo has not been charged with or convicted of any crime, but the pattern of behavior that has been described by the Associated Press is eerily similar from each woman. And yet Domingo today didn't apologize. What he said was, quote, "Recent accusations that have been made against me in the press have created an atmosphere in which my ability to serve this company that I so love has been compromised." Basically, it sounds like he's arguing that these allegations are getting in the way of his work, not that there might be some merit to what these women are saying.
Yeah, he has denied these allegations from the beginning. In fact, after the first allegations came out, he said that he felt that his overtures to women had been misinterpreted. He said that he believed his interactions and relationships were, quote, always welcomed and consensual. And then he went on to say in his first statement after the allegations first broke that he said, I quote, "I recognize that the rules and standards by which we are and should be measured against today are very different than they were in the past." And that got a lot of people up in arms because they felt, yes, that he didn't apologize and that he was kind of excusing behavior that even in the past, people felt he should have known better. Nonetheless, he, through his spokeswoman, has stood his ground on this and I believe is looking to clear his name still.
I also will add that the statement from the executive committee of the LA Opera didn't go much further, and they said, quote, "Plácido Domingo's contributions to the cultural life of Los Angeles have been unprecedented and profound." It goes on to celebrate his work and not really address some of these allegations. That said, it does leave a void in opera, and I think it's fair to say that it does leave LA Opera in a bit of a bind, as Domingo was the company's co-founder.
I think that they are really biding their time and waiting to make any comments regarding the allegations until the conclusion of that investigation. When they had their season opener of La Boheme, it was very notable that nothing was said at all about Plácido Domingo, not even during a black tie gala ball after the opening night. Mark Stern, the chairman of the board, said nothing. Nobody even addressed the elephant in the room, so to speak. So they've been holding their cards very close to their chest, I think, until they find out more.
Jessica Gelt is a staff writer at the LA Times. Jessica, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
Coming up next on The Frame, Antonio Banderas reveals the pain and glory that went into making the film Pain and Glory. This week, Antonio Banderas is back on screen in a movie from writer-director Pedro Almodovar. For years, the Spanish actor has made movies in Hollywood, including Zorro and Philadelphia, but his collaborations with Almodovar launched his film career. Banderas and the fellow Spaniard made 5 movies together in the 1980s, including Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. But when Banderas left Almodovar for Hollywood in the early 1990s, he and the director parted ways for a long, long time. They reunited for the 2011 film The Skin I Live In, and now they've made the semi-autobiographical Pain and Glory. Banderas plays Salvador, a famous director who is stuck in his apartment, unable to work. He reconnects with an actor who is also trying to revive his career. In this scene, Salvador talks with a doctor about his mother's death and his own ailments and how he never recovered from either.
Mi madre murió hace 4 años. 2 años después me operé de la espalda. Creo que todavía no me he recuperado ni de una cosa ni de la otra.
I caught up with Antonio Banderas at the Telluride Film Festival, and as we sat outdoors talking, he recounted how he actually first met Almodovar by chance.
I was at the National Theater. I was, I think I was 19 years old. Pedro, I think, is 9 years older than me. But I was with a group of actors outside of the theater in a coffee shop called Café Gijón. And this guy came, you know, with a... I always remember that he came with a red briefcase, and he... You know, he took over the table, you know, in a kind of a monologue. That was very funny. I don't remember what he was talking about, but it was. I remember that he was funny, it was fast, it was very ingenious, you know, in every comment that he made. And by the time that he was leaving, he just looked at me and he didn't know me. He says, "You should make movies because you got a very romantic face." And he left, and I said, "Sure, yeah, whatever." And so I asked, "Who is this guy?" And then some very, you know, bright mind at the moment said, "His name is Pedro Almodóvar, and he just made a movie, but he will never do another one."
That's true. He won't do another one. He'll do another dozen or more.
He did another 21, actually.
So how much time passed between that first meeting and your first working with him?
Not that much time, because he came with an actress that actually is in the movie, Cecilia Roth, which is an Argentinian actress that is in Pain and Glory too. And he came with her to the theater to see what I was doing. And at the end of the play, he came to my dressing room and he offered me to do a character, a little character in Labyrinth of Passions, which his second movie and the first movie that I ever made.
Wow.
Yeah.
What did he teach you as a film actor? Because you were doing theater at the time. Pedro was working almost exclusively making movies. How did he change you as an actor?
Completely. Because until that point, I was a theater actor. That was my turf. I was surprised that other actors, they can speak very low, because of course you got a microphone that is going to pick up your voice. So I was surprised of, you know, how natural you can be in movies versus theater, in which you have to play a little bit bigger than life in order to trespass the fourth wall. So I understood from the beginning. I said, I don't know if I am in character or not, but I have to, I realized that I have to be very honest in whatever I do here, because this toy that they have called camera, that picks everything. I realized that very, very early in the game. And at the same time, Pedro was not the most usual way to get into movies. So, you know, he was not a classic. He was reinventing cinema, because he was inventing it from himself. To himself.
There was an introduction to the film last night where Penelope Cruz was talking about working with Almodovar and about how she would always think that she had one take that was better, but he knew what he thought was best.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, when you're having creative conversations with Pedro about the work or a scene, is it always his way or the highway?
He would always win. Always. It's clear. You know, for 22 years, we didn't work, okay? So I went to America. I did a number of movies here. After 22 years, he called me back. So I got there kind of cocky, you know, after 22 years. And, you know, look what I have learned. Look how I act now. Look how I can manage with my voice and this and that. And after rehearsing a little bit, he just looked at me and he says, you know, I am not going to use all that that you're bringing. It's not useful for me. It may be very good for your American directors, not for me. So where are you after 22 years? Where are you? Where are you? And so, you know what happened? I confronted him. Instead of just, you know, because he's my friend. So I said, come on, man. You know, just offer you what I have to bring. So we did the movie practically the whole movie with two takes. He always gave me, I'll say, do it your way and do it my way. Of course, when I saw the movie in Toronto, the movie was his way. But guess what? It was better than mine. It was totally better than mine. So I have to recognize that. And when he called me for this movie, I got an opportunity to actually go his way from the beginning. No fights. I'm going to trust you. I'm going to trust you from day one. And I will understand two things. Why you are making this movie and why you called me to play you. And that was the two questions that I made to him. And we had months to answer those questions, and the answer is the movie.
I'm going to ask you about 1991.
Okay.
At this point, you've made five movies with Pedro, and he's making a movie called Kika. And you have a chance to make an adaptation of the Oscar Hihuelo's novel, mm-hmm. Mambo Kings Play Songs of Love.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to do Mambo Kings.
Yeah.
And I think these are your words of what Pedro said to you at the time. Hollywood will break you. You'll waste your talent. Don't say I didn't warn you.
No, he didn't say that to me.
Okay, what did he say?
He said it to other people.
What did he say to you?
To me, he took a picture. I remember that perfectly because I still have it. A picture of Victoria Abril, the actress, himself and me at the Berlin Film Festival in Germany on top of the wall.
For which film?
For Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. And he took the picture and he signed behind the Mambo Kings play very sad songs, Pedro. And then he went away for many years. And listen, I have done good and bad movies in and out of Spain, but I will never, ever step back, no one centimeter, of the things that I have done in my life, because I am content where I am now. And if I change any of those things, I could be in another place that is not as comfortable as it is now. Probably the world is not comfortable, but I am satisfied with who I am and how I got here. And I got the opportunity to do movies that I have never done in Spain, because there was no industry for those type of movies, like Zorro, the Desperado, the 13th Warrior, or Evita, movies like that, or Interview with a Vampire. I would have never done those movies in Spain, because the industry in Spain is not like that, So I'm very happy. And at the same time, from a personal point of view, I met the one who was my wife for 20 years, and I got a wonderful daughter. So America gave me more than I bargained for.
We're talking with Antonio Banderas at the Telluride Film Festival. One of the major themes of this movie is reconciliation.
Correct.
And about trying to atone for mistakes, patching up differences, forgiveness. And it's a story about an actor and a filmmaker in the film who are reconciling. And it's also about a filmmaker, Pedro Almodovar, and an actor, Antonio Banderas, reconciling. At what point does art imitate life? At what point are you trying to figure out if you're making a movie or telling your own life story? Or are you actually doing the same?
It's a very thin line. It's very difficult to know. And very special, especially with Pedro Almodovar, because Pedro breathes cinema, eats cinema. Everything is cinema. See, without cinema, he got no life. Literally. I mean, and he says this, and I'm inventing this. And so it's just his life and his work is the same thing.
How much of his life is in this film, and where was he in his professional and personal life when he made Pain and Glory?
There is one side of him in the movie that is very clear, which is he's physically, Pedro has suffered for many years. He got a number of different diseases. He got these recurring migraines that he cannot even talk. He had to get in a room, dark, and no sound of any kind, He got tinnitus in his ears. He got photophobia. That's when you see him in red carpet with black glasses, it's not because he want to be cool. It's because the flashes make him have a migraine immediately. He got an operation in his back also. He couldn't practically move for many years. You can go on and on. They are all explained in the movie. So that thing that is physical isolated him. And it became also a problem, a psychological problem after a while. So he was a man alone with a bunch of books and a bunch of movies. So that was his life. In that apartment that you see in the movie, with very little light, enclosed there, that's why. And it's very interesting, when we were going to do the movie, it's funny too. He said to me, okay, Antonio, you cannot move because you have your back, you have your problem. I want to see that in the movie, but very little. I want to see it, but very little. I am in a lot of pain, so little. And the guy takes this drug, and his tongue. I want to see it, but very little, And I want you to be me, but very little. Everything was very little. So what do you want me to do? put me in a position that I'm in the middle of nowhere. I'm like floating. When I see the beginning of the movie, I see myself floating in the pool. I said, that's what he said to me that I have to be. Just floating somewhere. But it was fun.
And the fact that he was stuck as an artist, is that true or not?
It's stuck because for him, directing a movie is a very physical work. You have to wake up very early in the morning, or you have to go the whole entire night shooting until 7 o'clock in the morning. He suffered from insomnia too, so if he get at 7 o'clock in the morning, he cannot sleep. So then the next night, he got to go back. So he doesn't feel capable physically to confront a shooting. But once he takes the determination of fixing himself, and he goes to the doctor and he says, I'm going to abandon these drugs, I'm going to go, I want to just shoot movies again. And there is a beautiful moment in the movie that almost passed very fast, but it's very beautiful. It's when he's just about to be in surgery, and the doctor comes and salutes him and he says, so how are you? And he said to the doctor, I cannot die here. I am writing again. And so the doctor says, oh, great. So what are you doing, a comedy or a tragedy? He says, life. I'm doing something about life. Boom. And he loses consciousness. So in a way, he's just sending a message that I want to live.
Up next on The Frame, Antonio Banderas didn't know about the private suffering of his longtime friend, Pedro Almodovar, until he read the script for Pain and Glory. I'm John Horn, and this is The Frame. My guest today is Antonio Banderas. He stars in the new film from director Pedro Almodovar called Pain and Glory. Banderas essentially plays an avatar for the director. His character is a beloved filmmaker who is isolated from the world and is reevaluating his life, especially his work with one actor, his mother, and his first big love.
Pedro is a very, very private person. And I never jumped to the other side of his privacy. I never tried. I respected that from day one. Very early in our relationship, I understood that that's his world. And this is the way, this is the universe in which we can connect, but no more than this. So I was surprised of things that he came on that script that I didn't know about him. About the relationship with his mother, the relationship with cinema, and actually that kind of apologizing mood that he brings with the actor, who is a Frankenstein of all the actors that have been working with him in a way, right? And I had lines there, probably are mine. I'm from Girls too, from Carmen Maura, from many of the actors and actresses that work with him. So, yes, I totally recognize many of the things that are in the movie as being part of the time that we start making movies together back in the 80s. But at the same time, if the people think that what they are going to find is a biography, it's not like that. You know, the movie actually is more Almodovar than Almodovar in a way.
That seems...
Let me just explain
it.
Like
it makes sense, okay, but because, I want you to explain it.
Because I don't think we are only the things that we are. Human beings, we are not only what we have done and what we have said. We are also what we wanted to say but we never said. We are also what we wanted to do but we never did. We are also that. Those dreams. And in this movie, Pedro brought that up. That conversation that he never had with his mother about homosexuality and about, you know, saying, Mama, I am sorry for being in a way that you didn't want me to be. But this is me. You have to accept me. So those things, you know, he never said probably that to his mother, for sure.
That scene that you're describing, well, Salvador is essentially apologizing to his mother, who is dying, about not being the son that she wanted him to be, is very difficult to watch, even as an audience member.
I know. I know it is.
And yet you're performing it in front of a director who, through your character, is telling the story of how he felt about his own mother. I cannot imagine what it was like to be doing that scene in front of Pedro, or what it was like for Pedro to watch that scene.
You know, Pedro, normally, he likes to come to the set right before we shoot the scene, and he read with us. So he reads the different parts of the actors, just to give a final indication, a final direction. You know, he read the part of my mother, and I was answering to him, and he gave some indications to Julieta Serrano, the actress that played that character. And then he was going to read my part. Every time that he was going to go for the line, he couldn't. And I said, all I need is action now, because I know emotionally where I have to be, because I'm seeing it. So I know how hard for you is to say this, go. And he took off, action. And we did the scene like that. So, you know, the level of emotion that was on the set was very crispy and very tangible, because the person that we are talking about was there. Not only was there, he was directing the movie. So it's very unusual that you find, the opportunity to actually play a character in those conditions.
I asked you earlier about what Pedro taught you as an actor. What did he teach you, and what do you think you taught him about getting along and about how you treat others and about what's important?
Oh, and about morality. You know, when Pedro started making movies, it was in 1980. That was 5 years after Franco, the dictator in Spain, died. So the Spanish society at that time, in terms of morality, was very conservative, strong Catholic, very, very rigid in many different ways. Almodovar shake the whole house in a major way. We were dirty people for a while. You know, it was not fun for us to just walk on the street. Sometimes people just started just screaming at us, you know, because we were the enfant terrible of Spain at the time. We were just perverting the morality.
You were decadent artists.
We were out of the box completely. Okay. We were just putting homosexuality on the screen in a very explicit way. When nobody was doing that in the world, why are you doing it in Spain? You know, if you kill people in movies, it's absolutely accepted by everybody. You can do it even in kids' movies. But if two people from the same sex get a kiss on the screen, people started screaming and just pulling their hair off, especially at that time in Spain. So, yes, I learned many things about life with Pedro because he was very natural when he was talking, you know, these things and putting them in a movie without no restriction and with no fear. And that meant a lot to me, you know, because I was not raised like that. So many of those, you know, spaces were broken by Pedro. And it was important for the Spanish society to have an artist of that caliber who can shake them and just make them reflect.
Antonio, thank you so much for coming.
You're very welcome.
Antonio Banderas stars in Pain and Glory. It opens in theaters on October 4th. And that is it for today. I'm John Horn at the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC. We're back here tomorrow.